You are listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Today is September 22nd, 2023. I am MP Holmes, and this story examines the complaints of the residents at the outdoor shelter at 1001 Herb Street and the growing encampments throughout Waterloo Region. The outdoor shelter at 1001 Herb Street, which is beside the landfill on the way to St. Agatha, opened earlier this year, and it has not been a smooth ride for many. Complaints abound. Residents pay to live there, and they claim they have not received copies of their leases, that the kitchen is inadequate, transport services do not exist, and that break-ins are common. It is not easy to verify this information. The public cannot go to the site uninvited, and multiple attempts to contact the region about this issue have gone unanswered. Jamie Steefe is a supporter and an advocate for the unsheltered population. She has been to 1001 Herb Street, and she has talked with the residents about their complaints. Jamie talked to CKMS to explain what these complaints are.
So in terms of the complaints that we've heard, and this is coming from people who live at the 1001 Herb site, and it ranges from big issues to smaller things that for some people might say are minor in comparison to being fully unhoused, but are things that anybody living in a sheltered space would want to fix if they had any power to do. So for example, so the bigger issues that we're hearing about are people who were asked to commit to living at the 1001 Herb site, sight unseen. They were asked to, you know, sign the paperwork to go without having the chance to look at it yet. But then when they get there, they were never given copies of the paperwork that they signed in order to go there. And these are people who I believe are signing over the portion of their social assistance money that covers rent, but they've never been given copies of the paperwork that they signed to go that basically says, you know, we as the region, this is what we commit to providing in exchange for what you are paying for this. And so we all find it really weird that, you know, as these complaints have come up, nobody is able to go back to the region and say, hey, what you've offered here doesn't actually live up to what you said that you would offer. And that isn't coming from a space of ingratitude. It's coming from a space of just protecting your rights. And it's something that everybody would expect in relation to that kind of an exchange. In terms of the more minor thing, not minor, again, I don't want to minimize it. The water in the showers being too hot for people to bear. And again, people who are very, very grateful for having the opportunity to shower on a regular basis saying, hey, there's no recourse for us to fix something that anybody else in a living situation would want to fix. Mm-hmm. Back in May, we heard stories of people mentioning that master keys had accidentally been given out and circulated, and checking in with folks again in August, we're hearing that that's still a factor to some extent. Mm-hmm. We know that the facilities where people can cook, they can only use a microwave. And so, yeah, the people, you know, joke that they're kind of subsisting on grilled cheese. Or like, yeah, they can use toasters and a microwave, but they don't have access to stoves. We've heard stories of folks living at 1001 Herbs showing up at a Better Tent City to try to get meals.
The shelter is quite far out of town, beyond the Wilmot line and beyond the landfill. It is also beyond the Costco store, which guarantees a steady line of cars along Herb Street. There is a shoulder to the road, but no designated walking area. Jamie described some of the issues with transportation to and from the shelter.
So many people said, yeah, that managed site at 1001 Herbs is really far away, but we heard there's going to be shuttles. So many people came back to that. And when you talk to people who live there, they talk about some sort of licensing issue or insurance issue that they could only, yes, the shuttle runs multiple times a day, but they're only able to have like no more than two people are allowed to be in the car in addition to the driver at any given time. So it's grossly inefficient for an encampment with 100 people. There are always kinks to work out with a new program. We get that. But on the other hand, it's like, these are people's lives.
The shelter at 1001 Herb Street has 50 cabins and about 100 people living there. It is on the edge of town with few transportation options. Many people who are facing homelessness do not want to live so far away from town. Jamie talks about the impact this is having with growing encampments.
Nobody who does work on the ground is surprised to see it growing. Like some people said, oh, with the 50 cabins that opened up at 1001 Herb, we thought that that would reduce the need for encampments like the one at Weyburn Victoria. And the main response is that site was never going to remove the need for like local encampment sites because we're in the middle of a housing crisis. The location of the site at Weyburn Victoria is close to services that people need. So when those spaces were vacated, more people moved in. That doesn't really surprise anyone. And with Ruse Island currently fenced off, where else did you expect people to go? There's different ways to look at this. One is existing people who were already homeless and comfortable with the concept of encampments. It doesn't surprise anybody that some of them have started making their way to Weyburn Victoria. So that's one. Because of we've heard of other encampments being closed down before we can even find them. Because the one at Ruse Island, like there's a fence, that was a safe space for people that was no longer accessible. So yeah, for people who have a history of experiencing homelessness, no one is surprised that people are showing up at Weyburn Victoria. Alternatively, and this one gentleman came up to me and he's like, you know, I'm not in a mental health crisis. I'm a pensioner and I can't afford rent with what I get from my pension anymore. That's why I'm here living in a tent. We've heard stories of people who live on ODSP, you know, the pension for people with disabilities in Ontario, them saying what I get for ODSP doesn't cover rent anymore. If you're on social assistance, there's a check you get, but it's sort of allocated for different things. And the portion of the check that's allocated for rent is something like $400, which covers nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where we see a really intense relationship between encampments, a housing crisis, and this other piece, which is what we're seeing in relation to food insecurity in the region, which can sometimes be used as an indicator of people who will be homeless soon. Because a lot of the time, if people are short on money and they have to choose between food and rent, they'll pay their rent and then start going to the food bank.
Jamie mentioned that the Waterloo Region Community Legal Services have begun to dig into these complaints. CKMS News talked to Patty Mazide, an intake and community legal worker at the Waterloo Region Community Legal Services, about her investigations into their complaints.
I did attend the site, and I was there for the express purpose of some discovery of my own within some of the areas that you've indicated. And I said, these are the things that I need to know about the kitchen. I need to know about the shuttles and the buses. There's a danger in walking. I need to know what's going on with the hygiene facility, showers, bathroom. And I was told they're all currently under review. My understanding with the kitchen, and I have some very specific notes, is there is no stove, right? So mm-hmm. What they're using are toaster oven, a toaster, and a hot plate. And that is due to latent vapor. Not ventilated correctly, so the building is not prepared to be in compliance with having something that does not release the latent vapor and potentially causes a fire risk. I did determine that the lease is not being withheld, that they are being held stored digitally. And I actually did request while I was there for some residents, but they can go into the main building office at any time to request a copy of their lease agreement. That said, I did acquire a blank copy of the lease agreement, again, for the purpose of relating it back to the Residential Tenancies Act and for determination of what those agreements actually mean for the residents and where, what legislation they would fall under protection and have protections with. We are still working on that. I can't give you an answer. I can't give you details about how we're looking into that, but that is something that we are still reviewing.
While Patty was able to clear up the lease issue and determine why the kitchen does not have more sophisticated cooking facilities, the transport issue is still unsolved, and with winter on the way, if a solution isn't found soon, the issue will become urgent.
I was fortunate enough to sit in a meeting after I attended Herbs Road with some key players within the region and sit at a round table and discuss these very specific things. And I came in there hot off of the heels of being at the sanctioned site, and witnessing a resident walking back from Iron Needles along the side of the road, and it was about 3:34 o'clock. So, you know, that raises concern for me, as we all know, and as a general rule, dusk is not a time that you want to be walking around.
Mm-hmm.
It's reduced visibility, and it just kind of shook me, and it was something that I addressed immediately, and I was provided just some general direction. My understanding is that it is under review, that the region is looking into what the winter is going to look like, because we're talking about the side of a road, and when the snow piles, we're talking about residents now walking down the middle of the road because the snow is going to pile in those shoulders, right? That's
mm-hmm.
just going to be the natural flow of it as it's plowed off of the main street. And then my understanding further with the superior powers is that they are reviewing what the winter is going to look like for travel and supports for public transit, because that was one of my biggest ones. Why can't a bus go down there? There's a bus that goes down the other side of Iron Needles at Highland
mm-hmm.
and goes out into the rural. So my question was, why can't that bus be rerouted to include coming down that rural road?
In January, the Ontario Superior Court ruled that the encampment of Victoria and Weber could not be taken down because there was nowhere else for the residents of the encampment to go. But yet, many other encampments in the region are regularly taken down. For example, the encampment at 150 Main Street in Galt was removed in the summer. There is not a new shelter, and the number of beds have not increased greatly. The precedent was set, but yet encampments are still being taken down. Patty answered why this is.
The precedent that was set was that housing is a human right. There cannot be a refusal of a person's right to safety and security and lodging and shelter. It recognized, and Justice Valenti recognized, the fundamental right of people to and Canadians and citizens and our unhoused residents in the region to have that security. And it laid the groundwork. And what, you know, what we're looking at is we're going, okay, well, this precedent was set. However, there are challenges that are being faced now and barriers that are being put up, but these barriers are coming in left and right. So when we look at, for example, what happened in Timmins, they tried to pass a bylaw that criminalized the support workers, right, who mm-hmm. were bringing survival kits and vital service kits and just general day-to-day support. They were stating it to become a crime to attend the encampment sites and provide these services to people. They were threatening that these support workers would be arrested and charged under the criminal code, right? That received such lavish backlash, and that backlash came as far as the federal level, where MPs were writing, you know, to the powers that be in the city of Timmins and just saying this cannot happen.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot. This cannot be something that. This cannot be the direction this can go. And fortunate enough that those voices were heard, and it wasn't carried out. But the fact that it was even a thought is probably what's the most disturbing in it. Right? Is the ostracization? Right? Like they're just trying to ostracize people and trying to segregate people and by whatever means possible. And that's probably what the most scary part of that situation was. To what end, right? Say they're finding violations in other areas that may address it from
right.
a different angle,
yeah.
saying, okay, this site is deemed not safe, or whatever the case may be, right? Support workers are now criminalized for bringing services. It's, again, it's cutting off limbs in different places and seeing what one is going to bleed out and essentially eradicate the thing. And that's unfortunate because that's not the idea of what that precedent was, right? And that's not mm-hmm. the premise. And that precedent set the bar for how homelessness and how people facing, you know, homelessness is supposed to be addressed.
This is such a complex issue, but there are examples of cities piloting different ideas. How do you explain Hamilton is one of these cities?
They have put into force a sort of a parameters and rules surrounding tenting, right? And tent shelters, allowing on certain and particular places no more than 5 tents to exist. But they've opened up this door and said, okay, so to address this issue, let's take a look at if we allow tents, tenting, and we allow residents to pitch tents, and we allow them to build these tent cities, small, five tents, right? Mm-hmm. What is that going to look like? It's not a permanent situation. We can't have people living in tents. That's not a permanent solution. It's a Band-Aid, right? Mm-hmm. And until that it is addressed, all this will continue to be a Band-Aid. But the city of Hamilton has recognized, let's start with the Band-Aid. Let's see what that looks like, right? And let's see if we can manage this thing. And as we navigate what next steps we're going to take, we really need to look at the affordable housing market, and not just for unhoused people, but for people who are making, you know, what was once the middle class income are no longer able to afford housing. So there needs to be some reform, and it needs to be addressed as a whole big thing, because people are losing housing because it is not affordable. And as a result of the loss of their housing, they're forced out into tent cities and forced out into living in their cars.
Patty offers ideas on how Waterloo Region can start change happening now.
Until the system is ready to look in on itself, there can't be change. I urge city councillors to get involved. I urge MPPs to get involved. But until that introspection is really considered and understood as a necessity for the system to move forward, there can't be change.
For change to happen, everyone needs to come together, including the unsheltered community, their advocates, and the government. As it turns out, this opportunity arrives on October 17th with the Waterloo Region Community Legal Services Poverty Reduction Fall Forum. Patty explains more.
So October 17th is the International Day for the Eradication of Poverty.
Okay.
And we've decided to host this first annual event, again, to talk candidly with our regional partners and organizations in this space about how we can think outside of the box. What are we missing, right? We're still trying to figure out why we're not coming together. So what's missing, right? What are we not seeing, and how do we address that? And how do we persuade the bigger authorities and the bigger powers that be to take that introspective look honestly and humbly and not feel shame in it? Because, I mean, again, it rolls back, right? Change can't happen if people aren't willing to look at what the issues are and what the problems are. We're a hamster on a wheel going around in a circle, not addressing anything. And meetings on meetings don't help, right? So we can, as I've been known to say, we can talk the talk all we want, but we need to start walking the talk, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what needs to start happening, is what we're saying and what we're hearing is not the same as what action is being taken.
The music on today's show is called Maple Music by God Mode, and it is courtesy of Expectantly Maple Music on YouTube. You have been listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. This is MP Holmes, and thank you for tuning in. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived versions of this program on radiowaterloo.ca/news and listen to all the LJI content at canada-info.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.